Coming up on this week's Book Show, playing out against the backdrop of Donald Trump's infamous Access Hollywood interview and the months leading up to the 2016 election, James Lasden's new novel, Afternoon of a Fawn, dramatizes one man's search for truth after his friend is suddenly accused by an old flame of sexual assault from decades ago. James Lasden on this week's Book Show. Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Playing out against the backdrop of Donald Trump's infamous Access Hollywood interview and the months leading up to the 2016 election, James Lasden dramatizes one man's search for truth after his friend is suddenly accused by an old flame, known to both of them, of sexual assault from decades ago. Lasden's new novel, Afternoon of a Fawn, tackles the questions, how and why do we believe what we believe? Just what is the truth? Where can we find it? And who gets to claim it? James Lasden is the author of the novels The Fall Guy, The Horned Man, and Seven Lies. He also is the author of several poetry and short story collections and the memoir Give Me Everything You Have on Being Stalked. His latest novel, once again, is Afternoon of a Fawn, and it is a great pleasure to welcome James Lasden to this week's Book Show. Very nice to have you with us. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
What led you to want to write a book that is being referred to by many people, including you, as a Me Too novel?
Well, I've always been interested in this drama of accusation and self-defense and establishing the truth of what happened in a room, basically. Sometime, I guess, in the beginning of 2017, various storylines came together in my mind and I just began writing it. This was before Me Too had actually started as a movement.
And yet it was shortly after the election, which plays into this as well.
Yes, I think Me Too. I mean, I began writing in early 2017, and I was just coming to the end when the whole Harvey Weinstein thing erupted at the end of 2017. So I was still working on it, but I was close to the end. And it was a very strange, interesting moment, because actually I thought that these dramas, which seemed to be kind of exploding into the news on an almost sort of weekly basis, I thought we were maybe at the end of something. I really didn't see that it was the beginning of a whole new phase and really a kind of social revolution. So that was both unexpected and kind of interesting in how it reframed everything I had been thinking.
In your novel, the profession that is at stake here is journalism.
Yes.
And we have learned over time that journalism with the likes of Charlie Rose and Matt Lauer is a profession hard hit by these accusations. Did that play into your curiosity at all?
Yes. I mean, I think that it's one of the professions where let's say your reputation as a journalist is a very important thing. It's perhaps more important than in other professions. So I think journalists who are accused of sexual misconduct or who actually are guilty of sexual misconduct are perhaps sort of vulnerable to being shamed or having their reputations attacked in a way that not every part of the population is.
As I mentioned in the introduction, the three main players of this book is the accused, the accuser, and our narrator. And the narrator and the accused are both journalists slash writers.
Yes. The narrator is more of a sort of, he's a bit more like me. I mean, he's his life sort of mirrors mine, and I do some journalism, but I'm more of a fiction writer.
Yes, a fiction writer, and also in academia.
Yes, a little bit, yeah. I mean, I teach creative writing, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Let us begin with the narrator first. This is a character who we get to know a lot about and yet is not fully defined as to a name or place, but we do hear a great deal of his story.
Yeah, and he's sort of the witness of events, the observer, and the kind of the figure who has to who carries the act of sort of judging what happened for the reader, and he sees himself as being fairly sort of neutral, dispassionate, impartial, but as tends to happen with these dramas, he gets implicated. He begins to realize he has prejudices in one way, and then gets torn, and he keeps being taken in different directions, and he realizes he's a lot more subjective than he perhaps thought he was.
The idea of being torn really does come through because he sides with his friend, and then he talks to the person who is the accuser and understands her point of view, and then also starts to question the friendship, and there really is quite a back and forth.
Yeah, and that's the main drama of the novel is his struggle to find a kind of stable point of view on what really happened in this room several decades ago. And it comes to mean more and more to him as the story develops to figure it out. And then, you know, to wrestle with the question of, well, how do you figure something like that out? And he has quite a bit of history with the accuser as well. I mean, she's an old sort of family friend of his, and in fact, when he was much younger, he had a kind of a crush on her. So he has personal connections to both her and the male guy who's his pal.
Family plays a role in this because both the narrator and the accused come from well-to-do families.
Yeah. They're not like hugely rich,
right.
But they're sort of well off. They're both British expats, which is what I am. And I mean, I drew quite a lot of the circumstances of their lives from the world that I grew up in, which was sort of comfortably off bourgeois cultured London. Which I've become kind of interested in writing about just generally anyway, and it was one of the reasons why this story appealed to me, aside from its kind of topical interest, was an accusation from the past gives you an opportunity to write about the past, and this accusation came out of a kind of 1970s London, and so for me it was an interesting way to get back into that world and write about some of the characters who I'd been thinking about from that world.
There are times where the narrator is in this London world, returns to America, comes upstate, and it is for him a different world. I assume that is for you as well.
Yes. I like that kind of contrast to have these two different worlds that the story goes back and forth between, both in terms of time and in terms of place. I mean, yeah, he lives in fairly rural contemporary upstate New York, but the story takes him into metropolitan, cosmopolitan centers of London and New York City.
And it seems as though it's almost a refuge from what else is going on.
Yes, I think so. I mean, he's a little bit of a reclusive character, which may or may not be partly a reflection of his creator.
So let us talk about Marco Rosedale, and he is living with his girlfriend and daughter in New York City, and somewhat out of the blue comes this accusation, as you said, from the 1970s. Give us a sense of the setup.
Well, he hears about it first from a newspaper editor in London who wants to run an excerpt from a memoir that has been written by the woman who becomes his accuser. And in that excerpt, there's a little sketch of a time that she and Marco spent as journalists together in Northern Ireland covering an IRA story. And they were in a hotel together one night when this incident occurred. And she writes about it in a fairly kind of offhand way initially in this memoir. And when he first, and the editor sends it to Marco to get his approval, to get him to okay it. And his first reaction is, yeah, that's fine. And then he looks at it again and he realizes that's not fine. She's actually, what she's saying, if you look at it, is she's accusing him of assault. And so he gets into a kind of drama with the newspaper editor trying to defend himself against it. And so that's how the story begins.
When you look at the story, because it begins, he said, she said.
Yeah.
And then you bring the narrator into it who basically starts to kind of ref it, right? Be a referee.
Yes,
in it.
Yes.
As to figuring out what happened.
Yes. He does sort of become the referee. And in a way, they both give him that role. They both encourage him in that role, or at least he thinks they're both encouraging him in that role. He doesn't perhaps execute that role as well as he might, but he does try to, and that's his kind of... That's his struggle, is to get some clarity on this situation.
James Lasdin is the author of the new novel, Afternoon of a Fawn. Certainly, given the last time you were on our program, you've written other novels since then, but the last time you were on our program, we were talking about your memoir, Give Me Everything You Have, which was about being stalked.
Yeah.
And your experience of being stalked. And your stalker was obsessed with your work and what you did. Talk to me about the parallels to that situation and what you explore in this novel.
Well, I'm sure there are obviously experiences from that whole ordeal that I drew on in this, which, I mean, my stalker would post terrible things about me online. I mean, she accused me of stealing her work and all kinds of things. And so I have some sort of material to draw on as far as that feeling of being accused of things, of being persecuted. But I didn't want to just make it a kind of replication of that. I think I definitely, some of the kind of emotions around that were found their way into this story, for sure.
Is this something that you could have written, given those emotions, is this something you could have written without having some time passed?
It probably helped to have had some time pass, yeah. I probably would have been too kind of in the thick of it had I written this right after that book. But, yeah.
There is a passage in the novel that I want to ask you about, and it's basically the narrator talking to Marco, and said on one occasion he said he was surprised I hadn't already written a book about a predicament exactly like his. I explained the difficulty that in a made-up story you'd have to clarify in your mind who was lying, the man or the woman, and that this would inevitably read as a larger statement about the relative truthfulness of men and women in general, which in turn would reduce the story to polemic or propaganda. In a true story, on the other hand, the question would remain specific to the individuals concerned and the particularities of their situation, which would make it much more appealing. And yet you're writing fiction.
Right. Yes. Well, yes, you got me. I mean...
So that seems to me your admission, if you will, of the challenges of writing a novel like this.
Yeah, that is the challenge of writing a novel. Well, that's one of the main challenges, is that if you're writing a novel that takes a kind of he said, she said thing, and you draw it to the kind of conclusion that would be the only sort of satisfying conclusion, which is you find out what happened, then how is that not going to be read as a sort of propagandist statement that, you know, men always assault or men always lie, or I mean, you just can't get around that. But I wanted to get around that, and one of the ways that helped me somewhat get around it, I think, was being setting this whole thing up as to read as much like a kind of nonfiction book as I possibly could. I mean, I hope it has the entertaining qualities of a novel, but I stick very close to the contours of my life, actually, and I give the narrator several sort of aspects of my personal history, because I wanted in my own mind to be thinking of this as a true story, and I think readers are sophisticated enough to know that yes, they're reading a novel, but they're being expected to respond to it as if it were a true story, and I think that they can handle that. You know, good readers. I hope so, because I would like them to read it like that.
Yes,
if that makes any sense.
It certainly does make sense. I don't want to give anything away, and I'm sure you don't either. But given what you just said, did you always know what the ending was going to be? Did you always know how you were going to get around that issue?
Not exactly, no. But I don't think I did. I mean, I think I knew it was something that was going to have to be thought through, and I knew that I wanted to embed the whole story in the political reality of what was going on at this moment, the whole of that kind of, that, as you mentioned before, the Trump campaign, and you know, to give it that feeling of sort of real sort of contemporary reality. I think I sort of felt that if I could do that, that would help me around that issue, and I hope that it does.
I don't want to give the ending away, as I said, but I will just read what is on the back jacket of the book from Joyce Carol Oates, who says, "Its ending is bitterly ironic, or perhaps just darkly funny, depending upon one's perspective." I can't think of a better way to explain the ending.
Thanks. I agree.
Yes.
I mean, it's a nice thing to have said, and I hope it's true.
I think it is. It is a way of addressing not only the story and the characters in the story, but also this, for want of a better word, weird time that we're in.
It is a weird time.
Do you think, when you refer to it as a Me Too novel, which has been done by others and you seem to have embraced it, I'm interested in the kind of pressure that puts on you of writing in a contemporary way of what we are going through?
One of the things that writing novels allows you to do, which I find interesting, particularly on a subject as complex and with so much is at stake, as is the case in Me Too. I mean, novels allow you to take lots of different points of view and bring them together in the same story. And you're not obliged as a writer to have a kind of simple opinion in the way that you are if you're writing nonfiction essays about. I mean, if I were to write an essay about Me Too, I would expect of myself or of anyone else writing an essay that you have a kind of clear point of view. Otherwise, it's just too murky. But novels are very good at sort of dealing with murk, I think.
You like murk, right? You like to wallow in that.
Well, I don't know about wallow, but I do, you know, as a reader, I like complex situations where lots of forces are at play and people bring, you know, their own agendas to situations. People have different kind of stakes in the outcome, and you get the kind of social struggle on a more complex level represented, ideally. That's what I like about fiction, both as a reader and as a writer.
Obviously, there is much here in this novel about the assault and the accusation and between the accused and the accuser. I found the relationship between the narrator and Marco, who is the accused, as fascinating as well. It's a weird friendship.
Thank you. Yeah, it is. Maybe it's a weird friendship.
It's weird.
Maybe
Thank
my
you.
Friendships are weird.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean they're not very old friends. They've kind of got close. They're sort of they knew each other a little bit through family connections back in London way back.
Yes.
But they weren't really friends then. Marco was a little older.
Yeah.
But they reconnected in New York like 10 years before the novel starts. So they don't have a huge amount of history, but they have that thing of being, you know, expats in New York and knowing a little bit about each other's world, and you know, both of them are are a little bit battered and bruised by life, not terribly, but somewhat. So they have that in common, and they kind of go in and they eat out together and have good conversations.
It seems though, in various times, they have an allegiance to one another.
Yes, yes. That suddenly at the beginning of the novel, the narrator feels a strong allegiance to Marco, and that gets tested and strained more and more as the story develops and as circumstances bring the narrator back into contact with Julia, the accuser. So yeah, it's partly a story about a friendship under increasing pressure.
I was also curious, the narrator's wife plays a role in the beginning of the novel and then has a lesser role toward the end. And I'm interested in sort of that idea of her as a way of kind of righting his ship.
Well, she's not involved deeply in the main story, but she's one of various kind of other voices and other kind of perspectives on what's going on. She definitely has her own views on things, and those are a part of the story, and they affect the narrator, and he incorporates them in his own kind of process of making up his own mind in a somewhat unexpected way, I think, but...
In some ways, she seems to even be to the accused more forgiving than he would be.
Yes, yes. Which I think is, you know, true to the complexity and the variety of opinions that you'll find around any of these cases from both men and women. It's not something that always, in my experience, always kind of falls neatly into kind of all men believe this and all women believe that. It's usually quite complicated and quite, you know, there are unexpected points of view.
The name of the new novel is Afternoon of a Fawn. So you helped me out with this, but I also did have to Google it, I'll admit. This is Afternoon of a Fawn comes from an opera?
It was originally the title of a poem by a French poet, Mallarmé, and it was then turned into a piece of music by Debussy and then adapted into a ballet by the Russian ballet by Diaghilev and Nijinsky. And that's probably its most famous incarnation is this ballet about a fawn, a fawn, F-A-U-N, not a baby deer. It's like a sort of mythic half deer, half human figure, or half goat in some versions, who wakes up and has a kind of very ambiguous sexual encounter that may or may not even be a dream. This is the original poem, and it's a very fascinating, ambiguous piece of writing, and then piece of music, and then piece of dance that you can actually see on YouTube. And it comes up in the course of the story. Somebody makes a brief mention. You don't need to know anything about it, but I liked the title basically, and I thought I'd use it for the title of my novel.
But it makes sense, right? I mean, it plays into the struggle and the ambiguity of the situation.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I was dealing with a situation that could be described in different ways, would have been described in different ways at different times during the culture. And I think that's what that original poem was all about, that original piece of writing was all about.
One of the things I find fascinating about this entire discussion that we're having as a society, but also that you talk about in the novel, is that there's also that these stories sell in the sense that we're interested in it. We want to know what happened, and we are more than willing to think the worst.
For sure. And we may be right to be more than willing to think the worst. I mean, I think one of the things that a lot of the stories that have come out since Me Too is that, you know, things were a lot worse than certainly the most men thought, than I thought, because it's women who experience them mostly. And most men just don't know the extent of harassment, for instance, going on in an office or something like that, unless they happen to be a harassing type of guy. So, you know, there was a kind of cultural revelation that occurred then. And I think that just intensified the fascination that's always present around those kind of issues of, you know, who did what to who.
Julia, the accuser, you also portray her as I think most people can be portrayed as not always reliable in what she is saying and what she is adding to the equation.
Yeah, well, she's a human being like anyone else,
right.
And she's of a, you know, she's lived, and she's had a somewhat rocky life.
She's lived, and yet you get the sense of at the point where we meet her, she is trying to survive.
Yeah, yes, I think that's true. She's had a rough time. I mean, she's, you know, the history that you get of her during the course of the book is she's someone who had a kind of rather stellar beginning to her career in
right.
media, and that things didn't work out too well for her. They weren't totally disastrous, but she struggled. And I wanted to portray someone who's had to survive in her world as best she can by doing whatever it takes. And, you know, she's not a perfect person, and she wouldn't describe herself as that. But I was more interested in making her a real person, you know, with all the kind of complexities of a real human being.
It seems to me in a novel like this that, yes, you have to write the book, but you also have to think about the book.
Yeah.
There's a lot of thinking involved
yeah.
for you.
Yes. I mean, it's not, I mean, you're dealing with sort of ethics, I suppose, to some extent. You're dealing with social morals. I mean, it's not that I spend a lot of time. As a writer, I just think at the level of story, really.
Right.
So the thinking I do is, well, I might have thought I would take the story in this direction, but once I start doing it, let's say it doesn't seem to be working too well, well, maybe it's going in the wrong direction. So that's the kind of thinking that I do more than, you know, consulting some philosophical text to see where I should, you know, what I should be doing at this particular point or something.
But thinking about it in the sense of what is rational for all parties involved and what ultimately we the reader, will understand and sympathize and look to as a conclusion.
Yeah, yeah. You do want people to behave in plausible ways. And once you've set up a character, you know, there are things that you can have them do and things that you can't have them do. And of course, you always want it to be plausible, and you want to satisfy the reader. You know, you've aroused a kind of curiosity in the reader about, well, what happened? So you have to satisfy that curiosity. But I think all books require that kind of thinking.
My final question to you, again, I'm going to go back to the back jacket of the book, in which one of the notes from Laura Kipnis says, it's also Lasdin at his most pleasurably diabolical. Do you like being thought of as diabolical?
I'll take it. I mean, I think she meant it as a compliment.
I think absolutely.
I'm happy with that. I don't know if I would want that to be the kind of permanent, you know, adjective to describe me, but I'll take it.
James Lassen's new novel is Afternoon of a Fawn. It is published by Norton. Again, I can't tell you how much I enjoyed the book and a great pleasure to speak with you as well.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you very much. James Lasdin's new novel is Afternoon of a Fawn, published by Norton. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org, and you can listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast or at wamc.org. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.